Welcome back on a Football Friday on the Junkies, brought to you by our friends at Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junks, looking to be their next five-star HVAC technician or plumber. Just visit cropmetcalf.com and you can join their team. Joining our team right now is our pal Kevin McCarthy. He's an entertainment reporter for Fox 5. He's going to talk about Monsters, that's on Netflix, The Substance, starring Demi Moore and Megalopolis. What's up, Kevin?
Good morning, my Papa Squeezies. How you guys doing?
Hello, so let's get Kevin. Megalopolis out of the way. That's a ridiculously long movie, right?
Nubalopolis.
Yeah, Megaflopolis.
Nice one. Good one.
Yeah, it's this is Francis Ford Coppola, obviously, like, you know, one of the greatest filmmakers in the history of movies. I mean, this guy did The Godfather trilogy, Apocalypse Now, The Conversation, Rumblefish, Bram Stoker's Dracula. I mean, this guy, and that's what's fascinating to me. I guess I'll go backwards a little bit. So I don't know if you guys have heard the quotes from Tarantino over the past few years where he's talking about retiring after his 10th film. And to paraphrase kind of what he was talking about is this idea that once you get to a certain point in your career, maybe you should just stop because maybe you've made your best work and you don't want to make anything like that might be bad later on in your career. But the argument against that is you still have great filmmakers like Spielberg and Scorsese, and a lot of filmmakers are still making great films past their 10th film and way later in their career. And Coppola, who's 85 years old, has been making movies for over 60 years now. And I don't think he's made a great film in a long, long time, and, you know, in decades. And so it's one of those interesting concepts. I think Hitchcock.
So he lost his fastball, is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it's an interesting perspective. I don't think it applies to every filmmaker, but as I'm watching Megalopolis, I'm thinking to myself, as I'm sitting here staring at a Godfather poster while I'm talking to you guys, I'm like, how did that guy who made The Godfather make what I just watched? And Megalopolis is, it's ambitious. It's self-funded. I think he took out, I think it's like $120 million.
That's a horrible idea. I mean, I know he's got a lot of dough.
What's the movie about?
Yeah, so the basic concept of the film is it takes place in an imagined modern America, like set in a Roman theme. And basically you have Adam Driver's character, who's like this genius artist that wants to create like a futuristic world using like digital technology and all these things. And then you have the old school thinkers like Giancarlo Esposito and Dustin Hoffman's characters who want to keep things the same, keep building the cities with like steel and concrete. And so it's this juxtaposition between the old school and new school ways of thinking, and how we, you know, in our society, we, you know, sometimes the older school things still work. And so I think one of the things about the film that it tries to talk about is that idea. The problem is the film feels like it's like a table read for the first time with the actors. I felt like everything I was watching in the film felt like the actors were still trying to figure out what their character, who their character was. It just feels all over the place. It feels sloppy. It feels, it just feels almost irritating in a way. And one of the things that Francis Ford Coppola has talked about in his press is that a movie like this has never been made before. And he's 100% right. I've never seen anything like Megalopolis. And there are times in cinema where films have come out that were very different from anything that anyone has ever seen, and they were, you know, bashed by critics for the first release, and then years later they become masterpieces. And that's happened many times before.
You're creating excuses, Kevin.
That's not going to happen.
No, I'm not saying that'll happen here. I'm just saying that I've never seen anything like it, and I didn't like it. I thought the film was incredibly boring. I thought it was irritating. I thought it was sloppy, and that's what doesn't make sense to me. Like, how does the guy who made The Godfather and Apocalypse Now and all those great films I mentioned prior make this film? And that's why I'm so perplexed by it. Like, I don't really... Like, this guy clearly knows how to make movies. He's been making movies for 60 years. So that's what I find confusing. So
what's your official rating? Sounds like
I gave
a one.
A two.
I mean, a two. You gave
two
it a two.
Five.
Kevin, wow. Who does their, I'm just being honest here, who does their best work at 85 years of age?
I mean, it's interesting. Look right? at Clint Eastwood. Clint Eastwood's actually made some pretty solid films. Like, I think he's in his 90s now.
He did make Sully The Mule recently, which I thought was pretty good.
Hmm. Yeah, and Sully. Sully was really good.
Sully was good.
Wasn't that a long time ago?
It might have been.
No, Sully was probably I don't know, 5-6 years ago, maybe. Like, oh, but I'm saying
more than that. Let me double check.
All right. So let's move on. Let's move on, because I just watched the trailer for The Substance. I hadn't heard of it. All right. The Substance starts Demi Moore. It looks like it's really good. Fill us in on The Substance.
This movie is one of the most insane experiences I've ever had in a movie theater. I saw it with a crowd, and the amount of people who were hiding their faces and just covering their mouths was incredible. So the story behind this film is basically this. Demi Moore is a famous actress, and in the film, her character is getting older, and she's being pushed out of Hollywood. But she used to be like the number one actress. Everybody wanted to work with her. And the movie is a commentary on essentially age and kind of how we age in life, but also in Hollywood, specifically for women, as women get older in the Hollywood system. How they're pushed out in a way, or the roles that they get are very different. And so the concept behind the film is Demi Moore's character is being pushed out, and she comes across this thing called the substance, where she can inject herself with this substance that essentially creates a younger, quote-unquote, better version of herself that can operate in the world alongside of her. I won't go into specific details, but it's a body horror film. So what I mean by that is this secondary person somehow comes out of her in a way, and is able to operate in the world. And Margaret Qualley plays that version of herself. And there's a bunch of rules that the movie sets up where, like, you can only be the younger version for 7 days, and you have to switch back to your regular self and then back and forth. But clearly, when you're dealing with something like this, you don't want to go back to your earlier, your older self if you're enjoying how your younger self is being perceived. So as you stay outside of the
boundaries, you know what it's reminding me of, Kevin, as you're talking about it, and maybe you can tell me if it's similar. I believe the movie was called Limitless with Bradley Cooper. Right, where he was taking the pill and he would get super smart, and then you want to take the pill more and more.
Right. And then the more you take the pill, the more it distorts your reality, and it becomes problematic. So in this case, essentially the secondary version of Demi Moore's character wants to stay younger for longer, which then messes up the system, which creates problems for the present day Demi Moore character. So it's a really wicked film. I'm trying to explain it vaguely, so I apologize if it seems a little confusing because I don't want to spoil anything, but the term body horror is what I want to use here, because the movie is nasty and really brutal in a way that, like, as each character abuses the substance on either side, it creates disturbing deformities in the characters, and it's really, really gross. But I thought it was really well directed. I thought it was really interesting in kind of how they use the editing. It's very Requiem for a Dream style, very quick cuts and just like disturbing images. But also, the movie to me is just a really interesting commentary on age. I think people seem to forget, like, in Hollywood, specifically for women, as women get older in the Hollywood system, it really is a very different perspective than what happens to men in Hollywood. You really see that women get different types of roles as they get older, and then specifically with Demi Moore, I don't know the exact specifics behind it, but I know that something she felt similar pressures as she was getting older as well. So I think the movie.
So what's your rating here? Should people see it?
Yes, it's absolutely incredible. I gave it a 4.5 out of 5. I just want to warn people that this is a very disturbing and brutal body horror film. Like there are scenes where even I had to look away, and it is one of those films where you can't really explain it. Other than the fact that you've never seen anything like it, except for what JP is saying, you've seen concepts that are similar, but you've never seen anything taken to this extreme. But what I love about it is the commentary it has. And I think Demi Moore deserves an Academy Award nomination. I think she's brilliant. I think Margaret Qualley is brilliant. Dennis Quaid is incredible in the film. It's very well done.
All right. So last one that you wanted to talk about today, I believe, is on Netflix. It's the Menendez movie. Called Monsters.
Oh, my daughter's watching it. She's riveted to it.
Yeah, so I'm 3 episodes in. So I just finished talking to the cast this week, Javier Bardem and Chloe Savini, and then the two actors who play the Menendez brothers, Lyle and Eric Menendez, who were played by Cooper and Nicholas, and who I did not know this case that well. I knew of the concept of it. It was happened in 89, obviously, or 89 or 90, so I was like 5 or 6 years old. I'm sure you guys remember the case because, or Eric, you've been around for 80 years, so you definitely saw this. But I found, so there's two things I want to bring up about this show. One, I do find it interesting that we as a society are so fascinated by true crime and real life murder stories. I mean, this is the number one show on Netflix right now. And I think people liken it to the idea when you drive by a car accident and you can't not look. And I think we are, there's a psychological element to this idea that we want to watch things like this because it makes us question ourselves, who we are, our morals. But for people who aren't familiar with this, I'm sure everybody is, but the Menendez brothers killed their parents. And in the show, Javier Bardem and Chloe Savini play the parents. And it is a very disturbing, obviously, story, and it was a huge case back then. And obviously,
did they touch on their defense that they were sexually abused by their parents?
The whole show is really kind of about that. They do touch on that. So the concept of the show is the first episode you have the murder, and then it goes back. And back and forth and back and forth. And then the abuse that you're referring to, Eric, is part of the story, and they're trying to, you know, and that becomes a big question as to like what happened, what really happened, what led them to this. And you guys, I'm sure, are aware of some parts of the case, like, you know, after the murder, what happened. And
is it good, Kevin? We only have a minute here. Is it good? Yeah. And I would recommend on Netflix, Mr. McMahon. I've watched 4.5 episodes of that. That's really good. The wrestling documentary.
I think for me, I think the show is really well done, but I do think that there is something about this idea of watching these types of shows and why we're so interested in them, and it makes me feel a little strange that it's being served as quote unquote entertainment. You know what I mean? And like, and I think I will say this: the scene where the murder takes place is absolutely horrific. In terms of like, it's shocking. I'll tell you guys this real quick before we go. The guy who plays Lyle Menendez, his name is Nicholas Alexander Chavez. There's a sequence in the film where obviously they kill their parents. And when Nicholas was behind Javier Bardem's head, to do the sequence where he shoots his father, he said that when he was filming it, the back of Javier Bardem's head reminded him of his own dad's head. So when he was shooting the scene, his wires got crossed, and it like he was almost thinking about his own father while he was playing in a role where his character was killing his father. And so if you watch that scene, look at his face, because a lot of that has to do with his own mindset. I mean, the scene is so graphic. And I've never seen anything really kind of that like that before. Specifically, the idea of two kids killing their parents, but the way it's portrayed in the show is very brutal. So just watch it with caution, but also think about the psychology as to why we're so fascinated by this. True crime is one of the biggest things right now.
Did they bring that up in their trial that they were sexually abused, or is that a later defense that they used?
I think that was in the trial. So I'm on episode 3 right now, so I haven't gotten to the trial yet. They just got to prison in the episode that I'm in. But I'm almost 99.9% certain that the abuse came up in the trial, because I'm almost certain it did. Again, I didn't follow the trial when it initially happened, so I'm kind of just watching it, and I'm kind of learning about it as I'm watching it, to be honest with you. So, I'm pretty sure that was a big part of the trial.
All right, Kevin, so it's Monsters on Netflix. You say it's really well done. Megalopolis, you called it sloppy, incredibly boring, gave it a 2 out of 5. But The Substance, you gave 4.5 with Demi Moore. All right, thanks, pal.
See The Substance in theaters. It's amazing. Yeah.
All right,
it's Kevin McCarthy.
Happy weekend. Later.
From Fox 5. Coming up next, we're going to get into Commanders in Arizona to take on Kyler Murray, Marvin Harrison Jr., and the Cardinals as we hit the skins here on the Junkies. Jason, you were saying you wouldn't go to see Sebastian Maniscalco because of the Alabama-Georgia game. How about going to see The Substance or Megalopolis?
I saw the trailer. I mean, it obviously looks creepy. I don't know how into that I am, though.
Yeah. It's definitely creepy.
It's very, very creepy. Yeah. The trailer, anyway.
The Demi Moore movie you're talking about?
Yeah.
Megalopolis. Impossible for any of us to see that after that review.
A payment. A payment would make me go.
That's the one he gave a two to?
Yeah. He gave it a two, I think, simply because it was Francis Ford Coppola.
Pay me $1,000, I would go see it.
He called it incredibly boring and sloppy, and somehow it doesn't get a one or a zero.
He's wondering why, when an 85-year-old codger makes a movie, that it sucks. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, Francis Ford Coppola has made some amazing movies, but he's 85 years old. Like, you don't do your best work generally when you're in your mid-80s.
That is generally the rule.
Unless you guys want to show me a bunch of people who are still, you know, throwing fastballs at 85 that I don't know about.
No.
Please let me know.
You can't be surprised by that.
Yeah, I'm not really that surprised that Francis Ford Coppola is turning in a clunker.
Well, EB cares about a 23-year-old quarterback throwing on Sunday.
Much more.
Let's hit the skins, brought to you by Don't Sleep Energy. Need to hit the skins right now. Grab a Don't Sleep Energy shot. Need to stay ready all day just in case. Sip on a refreshing 12-ounce can. You can grab both right now at don'tsleepenergy.com. Use the promo code JUNKIES. You get 10% off. And remember, don't sleep makes you great.
Don't sleepy.
All right, guys, just some of the basics. Of course, the game is Sunday. It's a 4.05 p.m. start. It's on Fox.
You're okay with the 4.05 since you're coming back from
New York. I'll be driving back from New York, so... I'll get up early because I like to just beat the traffic.
I think 4 or 5 starts are better, or 4 o'clock games are better than 1 o'clock games.
Because?
I mean, you can
look forward to it all day.
You can just do stuff. Like, you don't have to just sit on your ass at 1 o'clock.
That's true. Kind of takes up the prime part of your day.
Mr. Myers, you're not happy because you got to stay up until about 11:30 on Sunday night.
I'm not happy, but at this point, I'm used to it.
Yeah.
I mean, every season, there's a billion primetime games.
Yep. Sure. That's what happens when you're cell light.
What were you going to say, the Ravens? As someone who usually has to watch every 4 or 4:30 game, that's when the Seahawks play, it's the worst. Mm. Because you're sitting there and you're seeing the sun go down, especially when the clock falls back.
Yeah.
And then it's 7:30 and you realize your team lost and you wasted your entire afternoon.
You got to go to bed in an hour.
And you got to go to bed and it's Sunday night.
Yeah.
And the scaries are kicked in.
Sunday scaries are the worst.
The 4 p.m. games are the worst.
I don't know. Yeah. I love it. I love it.
I think I'm okay with a 4 o'clock start. I don't know if I'd want them every week, but you sprinkle a few in there when they're out on in the West Coast region of the country.
And this is their second 4. So they've played 2 4 o'clocks, or one was a 4:25.
Yep.
And a prime time so far.
Right.
They've only had the 1 1 o'clock.
And as Cake said, we're going to start getting flexed. We're going to start getting a bunch of prime time games.
Let's see how the season
Forget
goes.
It. No, just for Jaden. Just for Jaden alone, I think.
I mean, if they're last in the division, I don't know why they would flex them.
Like if you watch the 1 o'clock game, you're not like going out and like running errands or getting ready for the week at 4 o'clock. You're just rolling right into the 4 o'clock games. Then all of a sudden, you've just sat on your sofa for 8 hours.
Right. You feel like a lump.
With the 4 o'clock game, you can do all that beforehand. You know, kind of keep a casual eye on the 1 o'clock games, check your fantasy, and then boom, your team plays at 4 o'clock.
Yep.
Some basics. We've been talking about it sort of all week. The Skins are about 3.5 point dogs in this game.
Mm-hmm.
The ESPN matchup predictor, if you care about that, as Arizona went in this 61.4% of the time.
So hey, I'll take almost being a 40% underdog. That's not terrible.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly got a great shot at this. Jaden, of course, has played fantastic. He's completing 80% of his passes. That's largely being carried by that 90% performance he had on Monday night. But Kyler's also, he's balling. He's got 5 touchdowns and just 1 interception, Cakes. 59 for 86.
Slight issue, though, for the Cardinals. Marvin Harrison Jr. pops up on the injury report with a quad injury. Uh-oh. Something to monitor.
Right. Well, it looks like they do something here now. Maybe they've adjusted it this year, or this is just ESPN's bit, where they put their status, but then their estimated return date. For like the Commanders, they've got Jameson Crowder questionable.
Right.
Okay. But estimated return is the 29th.
Okay.
Benjamin St. Juice, questionable. You're thinking, oh no. I mean, he's our best corner, in my opinion. September 29th. So he should be good. Sam Cosby, questionable. Estimated return 29th. Same thing with Marvin Harrison. He looks like, even though he has popped on the list, he's expected to play. And then Trey McBride, their tight end, also questionable. expected to
play.
I'm
a little surprised he's expected to play because he suffered a concussion. I guess he's moving through the protocol okay. But usually when guys get concussed, they tend to miss at least one
week. I would only be worried and concerned if they miss the most of the days of practice. Certainly if they miss Wednesday and if they miss Thursday.
If they practice by Friday, they're good to go on Sunday.
They're not practicing all week, okay, then the question mark probably means doubtful.
Right.
But if they're practicing, they're going to play.
Now, I know Kyler overall is playing well, but last week that offense was shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Lions
are good.
Tend to shove it on people, especially trying to run the ball. Look at what James Conner did the first two games of the season.
Yeah, and then last week he did nothing.
And he ran into a brick wall in the Lions. So the Commanders don't bring that same sort of defense to the table.
Mm. All right, so we've got some audio that we want to play. First of all,
I think Kyler Murray is going to run more in this week. He hadn't run a bunch.
Mm. Well, we got to flush him. But I don't know if we want to flush him. I don't know. He could kill you either way, Cakes.
He ran for, let's see, 45 yards against the Lions, 59 against the Rams, and 57 against Buffalo.
Right, but his average per carry is a lot, but he's only got 15 carries.
Sure. Right. So he's gaining chunks. How many does Jaden have?
38.
Right, so he's got 23 more carries than Kyle. I just think he'll run a little bit more this game.
Jonathan Gannon, coach here in Arizona, is asked about the NFC Player of the Week, Cakes.
And that would be one Jaden Daniels
the
last
guy
time I checked.
Who's taking the NFL by storm.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what he has to say about Jaden.
Is it any different preparing for a rookie quarterback because you don't have extensive NFL film on them?
Yeah, a little bit. That's a good question, Donnie. I think that, you know, through the three games, you can see, you know, kind of his skill set, what they like to do with him, those things. He's obviously a very unique player to game plan against because of his skill set. He's got a unique skill set, but he can throw it all over the place. He can extend plays. He can throw it down the field. Big time player.
Got respect for the opposing quarterback. He knows what a threat he is. He's well aware.
Big time player.
He just better hope Jaden doesn't go shoo 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 explosives like he liked to say when he met Kyler Murray back in the day, because that could happen. Could happen on both sides of the ball.
What players are officially out for the Commanders?
Eckler, Eckler,
obviously.
Farrell.
What about Forbee?
Yeah.
Forbee.
I think they're expecting him to be available from what I've seen.
Okay.
I don't know if that's good or bad. Probably bad.
A lot of people are talking about the Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray angle. Both have obviously slow played it. Cliff's not super talkative, right? I don't think he.
Right.
I don't think either guy super enjoys talking to the media, to be honest with you. But they asked Cliff, what was the difference between week two and week three, especially all those red zone issues, et cetera, that they had in week two? None of those really cropped up in week three.
Yeah, the biggest deal was the negative plays. We had 18 in week two, and we had 4 the other night. And it allowed us to not be in many third and longs and stay on schedule and play downhill and mix in some of the tempo. And I think that was the kind of secret sauce to being able to score in the red zone as well. No negative plays in the red zone, which the previous week was our Achilles heel. So I thought the negative plays was the biggest improvement.
They did have a couple penalties in the second half. I know they played a clean first half. I'm 99% sure. And I remember at one point, it was like second and 21. I'm like, oh no, here we go. But they got a first down. I can't remember if they scored a touchdown there or what. But I think they only had a couple in that game. So big difference in week three from week two. DQ, of course, has been on the mic several times this weekend. And I forget what this quote is about, Valdez. You want to remind me what he's talking about here?
It's just an observation. So DQ, Jaden, and Cliff like all talked yesterday or the day before. And a lot of the stuff that were a lot of the questions directed towards them was about like the offense, because it was Jaden's breakout.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like there's a lot of euphoria around the offense, and it's kind of overshadowing just how bad the defense is. So I just wanted to find something about the defense. And this is the only clip Dan Quinn was asked about the defense.
Gotcha.
If it plays.
And then defensively, are you guys playing with the speed that you want to, that you need to I guess, be even more effective, or to be more effective?
Yeah, not yet. I'd say we're gaining there, you know, and so we're still building onto that. But we're not hitting the marks that we want to yet. By no means is that where we're going to end up. And I love the crew. I love what we're about. And so as we're going to grow, they're going to play faster. They're going to play more violent. And so the more of that we do, then you stack on some more and stack on some more. But we're not to the space we will be yet, John. No.
I think one of the refreshing things about Quinn is he is a straight shooter. Like everything, I mean, for the most part, it's going to be coach speak. But everything from Ron Rivera was coach speak.
I mean, yeah, Ron, just a pathological liar.
I mean, it's easy for DQ to say that when his team's giving up over 29 points per game. It's pretty easy to say, yeah, we're not where we want to be defensively. Yeah. We're almost allowing 30 points per game.
I mean, it's obvious. Yeah.
But, like, there's 15 cuts of Dan Quinn.
Yeah.
All right, so 15 questions to the head coach. Mm-hmm. Only one of them is regarding the defense.
Because, like, people are so enamored with what Jaden is
I know,
doing.
That's what I'm saying, is that the defense is just out of sight, out of mind, because everyone is in this honeymoon phase with Jaden and how the offense
looked
in prime
time. Everyone but this guy right here, who all he could think about is how bad our defense is.
I just think everybody's resigned to, I mean, you're into the season now. What sort of improvements and tweaks can you make?
They're going to add Efe Obada, Kate.
Okay, well.
He's going to be the difference maker.
If you think he's the tonic, if he's the cure-all to turn things around, great.
No, I
think people just know that this is what the defense is going to be. They need major additions during the offseason, which you will see.
Yeah.
And they just kind of have to deal with the pieces
that
they're
going to be weeks where the defense plays much better and you go, wow, it's kind of surprising, but I don't know if it's this week.
All right, speaking
probably not this week.
There have been rumblings already. I've already seen there are mocks out there that obviously have the Commanders drafting a wide receiver in the next draft, you know, high in their first round pick. I don't know where they have them picking. But they have them taking a receiver. And then some have gone a step further. I believe it's Dan Graziano who does he work for, ESPN? He's gone on record and basically insinuated that the Commanders should make a trade for Davante Adams and his $140 million contract.
I don't know.
We talked about him yesterday. I think the guy that they should get is Travis Hunter and have him play receiver and corner.
Sure.
That's the guy they draft.
Yes.
Potentially. Yeah. And
he's just talking about before
high.
The deadline.
Yeah, but potentially you could get them. Now, others are talking about Hassan Reddick. What's his deal? He's not playing? Is he holding out? Yeah. So, I mean, maybe he could help us on the defensive side. But
those are both some aging pieces, though. Like, Davante Adams is already 31. Are you really going to pick him up and add him to a rebuild? I just don't see that happening.
What's he got left on his deal? Like,
probably two or three years, I would guess. I don't know how much.
It was a 5-year deal.
He only had four catches last week.
5-year deal.
But he still looks like he's in his prime to me.
I think
the week before, he was making great plays.
I mean, trust
me. He's 31.
You think he, like, if you got him in a room, you think he wants Gardner Minshew or Aiden O'Connell throwing him the ball?
I brought it up in True False yesterday.
How about he went on the Kay Adams show and he started hyping up Jaden?
But again, he's to blame because he took the big sack of money to go to play for the Raiders.
He was traded, but then he signed five years.
He could have stayed in Green Bay with a stable quarterback.
Or he could have said, I'm not signing with you.
Right.
I'm going somewhere else.
So he's the one that basically
forced his way out.
I am just looking, even though a lot of these guys are expected to play, in practice on Wednesday, wide receiver Marvin Harrison and Buda Baker were both limited in practice.
Mm-hmm.
Lineman Dante Stills, linebacker Dennis Gardeck were also limited. They got some guys that are banged up. You mentioned McBride and his concussion. So, I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully they got a couple guys that just can't go, Cakes. I'll take whatever we can get.
That would be nice for the Commanders if they dodge some of those bullets.
I mean, if Harrison couldn't go, that would be huge. I mean, who do they have? They got Wilson and
Greg Dortch out of the slot.
Yeah, they don't have much after Harrison.
Yeah.
Coming up next, we've got our touchdown parlay.
All right, guys, you're paying way too much for that eyesore sitting in the driveway. Well, you can upgrade that eyesore to a silly new all-electric i4 from my guys at BMW Fairfax. EB here. Now you can drive a new 2024 BMW i4 for as little as $549 a month. Or snag up the $14K off MSRP. Or score one of the very few remaining 2023 i4s as low as $389 a month. Or up to $20K off MSRP. Do what I've been doing for years, decades actually, for the ultimate buying experience on your ultimate driving machine. Get over to BMW of Fairfax.
Put up our Junkies poll of the day, brought to you by Scotty's Vodka, Maryland-made, super smooth, love throughout the DMV. Put it up at Junks Radio. Very simple. Who wins on Sunday, Arizona Cardinals or Washington Commanders? Ooh. You can vote at Junks Radio.
Now, let me guess. People are high. I'm going to say it's 50-50.
Close right now. It's a 56% Commanders.
I definitely think we got a shot.
You can vote at Junks Radio.
Freaking Cardinals.
Got a shot, but I don't think the offense is going to be as sharp as it was on Monday night.
It's not, but are we going to be as bad defensively too? And so maybe it's kind of a wash.
Look.
I mean, we're going to punt.
You don't feel great about it.
I don't feel horrible about it.
I think they will be as bad.
We're going to be competitive.
Look, you're playing a 1-2 team. It's not like you're playing a 3-0 team. So.
Right.
Yeah, you got a shot, but they got, if Harrison plays, legit weapon there. Connor's always good.
I mean,
especially against bad teams that can't stop the run. And Kyler can get out and bounce.
I mean, just a couple days ago had me thinking that Harrison was a bust. Now we're saying
he got off to a slow start in game one, and then he's been basically
been a stud.
Nuking people since.
Come on, Valdez. Let's trash him.
He was in a fantasy tizzy, what he was.
Two games.
He's in panic.
Two games.
Yeah.
Our Instagram page, Sports Junkies Radio, give us a follow at Sports Junkies Radio on Instagram. 66% have voted Commanders.
I mean, I definitely think we have a chance. But and I'm not worried about the offense. We're going to find a way to score points somehow. We're already
Cliff seemed
in
confident
league.
In that clip that you played.
What?
Take away the negative plays. I said Cliff seemed confident in the clip that you played earlier.
He knows he's got his side of the ball rolling.
Yep.
Worried about the other side.
Yeah.
All right, let's get our touchdown parlay going. Let's win some cash.
Let's do it.
Hmm.
Ready to win some money.
Do we have audio cues for that? Is that what Valdez is trying to find? For our touchdown parlay?
We usually spin the wheel.
Oh, we spin the wheel?
Yes.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, I don't have that sound effect. That's Valdez's territory.
All right.
I wonder who's going to pick first.
Let's go with John Paul Flynn.
We're just talking about Marvin Harrison Jr. I veered away from my formula, which worked the first 2 weeks, which was picking a top receiver against the Commander secondary.
It's tried and true.
It is tried and true. Yeah. It's definitely better than picking DeAndre Swift to score a touchdown, which didn't happen last week. I'm going to go with Marvin Harrison Jr. We were just talking about him. The Commanders secondary allowed 4 touchdowns to Baker Mayfield in week 1, 2 to Daniel Jones, 3 last week. I think the trend probably continues, and Marvin Harrison Jr. has a receiving touchdown this week.
He is at plus 105, so he is in. He is the first. All right, who's up next?
All right, I'll go. I originally wanted to go with James Conner for the third consecutive week.
Yeah.
All right. I hit in week 1, didn't hit last week because they did nothing on the ground against the Lions.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at the Commanders' defense going, I mean, everyone can score on the ground against them.
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't want to put all our eggs in one basket.
Understood.
Because that would mean Harrison and James Conner.
All right, so no Conner.
So then I flip to Chuba Hubbard.
Yeah.
And Cake says, well, I'm picking Chuba.
That's right? Correct.
Because I think he's going to score.
I planted my flag on Chuba before you.
You did. So then I went to Nico Collins.
Yeah.
Because they're playing Jacksonville. Jacksonville has one of the worst pass defenses in the league, the third worst in the league.
Okay.
And
seems like a good play.
And they're 0-3. They're one of the most disappointing teams in the NFL. And they've just been getting torched through the air.
Yeah.
But Cakes goes, well, Nico's on the injury report.
Hammy.
Sounds like he's consulting Cakes too much.
They can be delicate.
No, I didn't consult him. I'm just giving them the picks.
I just thought
he's just responding
when
to
he said
it.
Nico Collins, I was like, he's got a hammy. Hammies can be troublesome, especially for wideouts.
Yeah. All right. But I'm going to stick with the Texans receiving core because if Nico doesn't go, that means Steph Diggs is going to get a ton of targets.
And Tank Dell also unlikely to play.
So you got injuries to the other two receivers.
Yeah.
And like I mentioned, Jacksonville's got a bad pass defense. And I think that coming back from that bad loss that the Texans had last week, they were embarrassed, 31-7 or whatever it was. I think they're going to come back strong, especially through the air. And I like Steph Diggs to score a touchdown this week against Jacksonville.
All right, he's in. He's in the parlay.
And I think I'm getting a plus number, aren't I?
You have Diggs at plus 120.
There you go.
We're all doing this, right? The boys behind the glass, too?
Oh, yeah. They're putting their heads together for a pick.
All right.
Is it just one pick, or are they separated out?
I think it's going to be one.
We're just doing one because all you guys are here. So.
Gotcha. Okay, why don't you go? You go. Behind the glass.
Valdez and I have been battling all morning coming to our play here. I think I'll take the lead because I won out, but I think he's coming around. We like the Rams-Bears game, and with Puka out and Cooper Kupp out, someone's got to take the lead. And last week, Tutu Atwell was finally getting involved. McVay goes to him, goes away from him, goes to him. But after the game, he was hyping him up, saying they got to get back to him this week. They're going to run for the fly motions. I think he's going to get a deep shot early. I like Tutu Atwell to score a touchdown against the Bears on Sunday.
Well, it's gonna be some big odds on that.
Juicy.
I believe
it's like plus 290, plus 300. Somewhere
I need to find
there.
Him here.
What's your rationale again?
They got nobody
the other
else
guys
to
are
throw
hurt.
To.
Yeah, and he's becoming a trust. Stafford's trusting him a lot more.
Right. He's at plus 300, plus 300.
All right, I hope.
He's
well,
honest.
If we share,
put some thought
and
into
it. When we share a play, we're probably not going to do a minus 120. We're going to be in the 200 range probably. Every
okay.
Week.
All right.
I can tell you this. I picked up Jordan Whittington in a fantasy league because Kupp was out and the sand Puka's out and he did nothing.
I think he had like three catches for 25 yards.
Very underwhelming.
So we got behind the glass. All right, so let's go Mr. Bickle.
You know, I was going to go Brian Robinson.
Oh, you pivoting?
I'm pivoting,
okay.
I think.
All right.
Because Eckler is out.
Mm-hmm.
And B-Rob's been great. I mean, very good. He's averaging 4.5 yards per carry. He had the 140-yard run, but he's not – I'm just not 100% sold. I feel like Jaden, who scored one – has he scored one every week?
Not every week.
No, they didn't score against the Giants.
They only had field goals in that one.
Right.
He's got three.
But he's got three. B-Rob's got two. He's just riding a wave right here. I feel like anytime they're inside like the 5-yard line – I mean, Jaden could just dance.
Oh, he's definitely in play. They're at the goal line.
Yeah, so I'm going to take Jaden. It's probably like even money, but I'm going to take Jaden.
He's plus 105.
Even money.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's in the parlay.
Right,
he's in.
So what does that put us at there,
well,
Cakes?
Cakes hasn't given his official
my
play.
My guy.
Although Jason gave it away.
Go ahead.
Chuba Hubbard is the guy I'm picking. Now, you might think he plays for the Panthers. It's Panthers-Bengals. That's the second highest total on the board this week. After Commanders Cardinals, 46.5 points. He owns that backfield. He's outcarried Miles Sanders 37-19 so far this season. Now they're just waiting for Jonathan Brooks to come off the pup, their prize rookie that they drafted, I believe, in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
But this is Hubbard's backfield, at least for this week. He owns it.
And he had a big week last week.
And he's averaging 86 rushing and receiving yards per game. So he's got multiple ways to get to the end zone. I think his one touchdown this season so far was a receiving touchdown. I think Hubbard finds the end zone in what could be a high-scoring game in Charlotte.
All right, so recap.
All right, so we've got Marvin Harrison, Jaden Daniels from the Commanders-Cardinals game. They're at a combined plus 304 because it same game parlayed them here on my screen. It doesn't have the individual number. Hubbard's at plus 100. Diggs is at plus 120. And Tutu Atwell is at plus 300. So a $10 wager.
It's going to be a big one.
Will net us $701.48. And that's also before we get a little parlay boost on Sunday, hopefully. So that number could go up to, like, I think close to a G, possibly. So right
now,
nice. 701.48. Hopefully that number goes up before kick on Sunday when the bet is actually consummated.
All right, we'll put the picks up on Instagram, Sports Junkies Radio, and on our X page, @JunksRadio. Coming up next, it's Fridays with Feinstein here on The Fan.